him. Catch, touchdown.
Stop it. Stop it. You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Jacobs cutting back. Getting to the edge. Jacobs is in for the touchdown.
I just don't remember anybody doing what this young man has done so far in the league.
It's fourth down and one.
Welcome to Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick, the Chiefs have lost three or four games. Are you concerned?
At home? Yes.
All three losses have come at home, but I mean, they've lost three or four overall. The one win came at Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So are you concerned?
No, not yet. I still got time. I'm not. We'll see what they do in the final three games here for the bye week, and we'll see how healthy they can get in, during that span, and then I'll go from there at that point.
You know what? I'm still, here. Obviously, the Green Bay game was a few days ago now. We're midweek, getting ready to play the Minnesota Vikings if you're a Chiefs fan.
We're not getting ready
to play. If you're a Chiefs fan. We are sitting here midweek. Yes, we are. We are sitting here in the middle of a week. It's not... I'm still encouraged, strangely, by the Green Bay loss. And I think it's because I expected them to get trounced pretty good in that game. I didn't think they'd get like blown out by two or three touchdowns, but I thought they'd lose by more than one score. And I didn't think they'd be particularly competitive in doing so. I thought it would be one of those games where the final score would be maybe a touchdown or 10 points, but that would be because they got a late score or something that made the game look a little bit closer than it actually was in reality. I don't know. After watching film, I mean, what are your takeaways from the Green Bay game? Did you feel like they acquitted themselves a little bit better than you had expected?
I thought the offensive line collectively had better protection. I thought they would against Za'Darius and Preston Smith. They did better in that regard. So I was impressed by that. I wasn't surprised how they were able to attack the Packers secondary. That I figured that was going to be there. There were some shots that Moore wasn't going to be able to make that Mahomes would have made that would have equated into touchdowns and some better conversions in the red zone. So unfortunately that wasn't able to happen. But for the most part, some guys that actually really did step up from the tape study. I was impressed by Colin Saunders. He did a really, really good job.
Week after week, he seems to be getting better because he was the guy who stood out for me a little bit in the Denver game too.
So he was steadily improving. So he's able to properly bull rush offensive lineman one on one. He's still working on getting whenever he gets double teamed how to properly drop the knee, how to not get turned, and not get moved. So he had some problems there in the final drive where it wasn't working out for him because he was tired, as was Tano Passanio and Manuel Ogba and Derek Nnadi, with how much they'd played in that game and how little rotation they had to catch their breath and how much they had run some twist game stunts and set up some of their blitzers. So they were all tired. Tano Passanio played out of his mind. He played a really, really good game. Manuel Ogba took advantage of every opportunity he had. Nani's gotten back to the consistency that he had last year, especially towards the end of the year. I would say Travarius Ward looked really, really good.
Yeah.
He really stepped up from the coach's film from what I saw. He's steadily improving. You hope to continue to see that improvement as the season rolls on, but he had himself a really strong game.
Disappointed at all that the Chiefs let the trade deadline pass without making any additions do you think that they needed to? Do you think that this was a missed opportunity for the Chiefs?
No, from what I'd heard about what the market was asking for a lot of those players, the only one that I thought would potentially be in the ballpark was going to be maybe Leonard Williams, if there was some interest there, because I know at the time that was, I had heard through my contacts that it was looking around a fifth-round pick in that regard, and then the Giants came in with a third and a fifth that could potentially turn into a
conditional fourth.
Could turn into a fourth next year if they sign into a long-term extension. So you're not going to be able to give the same value, especially with where the Giants are, where they'll be picking in each round with how awful their team is. So the Chiefs weren't going to be able to be competitive with that. Contract dump that the Dolphins did with Aqib Talib.
Or accepted with Aqib Talib.
Yeah, I mean, it was
Look, I mean, it's important. First of all, he's on IR until week 13, right? So it's not like
it's week 15. So earliest, I think he's coming back and be like week.
But, well, point is, he's not a guy who can come in and make an immediate impact. He's a guy that he's not even going to be available until December. You're eating a ton of contract there. And I think it still remains to be seen. I think the jury's still out as to whether, you know, Aqib Talib, with the injury history he's had the last few years, comes back and is elite, you know, and is. You're not getting Denver Aqib Talib from those Super Bowl teams.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is like those days are past him, and the Rams know that, and that's why the Rams did what they did to move on from him, just like that's why they moved on from Marcus Peters and got and went their separate way in that one a couple weeks ago. So the Rams moved on from it. They brought in Jalen Ramsey, and they their experiment that they had got them to Super Bowl last year, but with some of the personalities they had in that locker room, they had to move on as well, as some other teams would from some of those guys. So that's what they did in that regard. So trade-wise, I mean, I there wasn't going to be anything out there that you could get that was going to be reasonably cost. And also, when you're looking at this roster and what you're going to build long-term, you need all those draft picks to continue to stay competitive to where you don't have those down years with Patrick.
Well, and the other thing is, look, would you call it a lock or would you just say near certainty? But they've got a contract renegotiation or a contract extension to work out with Patrick Mahomes in the offseason.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people made a lot about, hey, they've got, you know, $23, $24 million in cap space this year. But if they don't use it, it rolls over to next year. And that's money you can use to pay down, whether it's Patrick Mahomes' contract, whether it's signing a guy like a Chris Jones to an extension, or money that you can use, you know, to convert to pay down, you know, other guy, you know, whether it's money owed to Frank Clark, whatever, you know, depending on how things work out and what you do with some of those deals. But that's money that can be. It's not like it's wasted money if they don't spend it this year. There's a way to use that next year too.
Yeah, you're. In my opinion, what I would do in their situation is I'm just going to take that money, roll it over into next year, like you talked about. And that's going to account for the cap hit that you're going to give Patrick so that it stays steady over time and that it's not like Dorsey, for whatever reason, used to love doing cheap year one deals and then it just balloon year two, three, and four. And there was so much in terms of bonuses and guarantees in that two, three, four that you weren't able to get out of those contracts. Like, you look at Duvernay Tardif's contract. They're still paying for it, and he got that in 2016 or 2017. 2017, I think. And like they could potentially get out of it next year or wait and get out of it a year later. But, I mean, there's a lot of contracts that Dorsey really kind of locked them into.
Well, that's the thing. He tended to backload. He tended to sign guys too late so you weren't paying for their best years. And then he overpaid on the back end. So now you're paying extra money for when Eric Berry's hurt and can't play, for when Justin Houston's, you know, hurt and can't play. I mean, but now you're stuck with guys like that, you know, and you got to cough up, you know, $15 million in dead money to get out from under it. I understand Houston's playing well in Indianapolis, things like that, but it's not a smart way to manage a roster. You want to pay for production when they're producing.
Correct. Yeah, you want to be, and this is what Howie Roseman used to do with the Eagles all the time, and this is what I think Brett Veach is trying to follow model wise is, you want to pay the player before they completely ascend to where they get premium top market value, and so if you can get that a year early, maybe 2 years early, like they did with Travis Kelce, then that's when you want to do that. So you're paying for the proper production on the field versus paying for production of yesteryears.
And I think that's also, I think the Tyreek Hill contract.
Yeah, Tyreek is another one, you know, right,
they're,
now.
They're paying him. He's a guy that's still, I think, still ascending. I think he's going to be an even better player at the end of his contract than he is at the beginning. And so, you know, and then by the end of his contract, you're going to be getting him for value unless you, you know, rework and extend him again or something like that. But you're going to be getting good value for him at that time.
Yeah, so I think a lot of that money is going to go towards what I like to call the Patrick Mahomes fund.
The
Patrick Mahomes fund. So you just, that accounts for that. So then you still probably have 20 or so million in cap space, and then they can adjust from there in terms of some of the contracts that they may need to decide on in the following year. But that's something that's really more for January or February.
No, and we'll definitely talk about it later on. While we're on the subject of Mahomes, though, you know, I mean, you know, the report was, you know, from NBC, you know, on Sunday Night Football last week that if it had been a playoff game, Patrick Mahomes would have given it a go against Green Bay. One, are you buying that? And two, do you expect him to now play against Minnesota?
If it was a playoff game, I totally see him wanting to. I don't know if they would have been able to. I don't know if it would have been 100% convincing that it would have happened, but I'm sure he would have wanted to, and I think the organization would have done what was best for Patrick Mahomes long term in their franchise.
You would hope. You would hope.
and then I don't want to see him against this front four this week personally. Actually, it's front seven. I would prefer not to see him against the Vikings this week. And I'm still iffy on if I want to see him against the Titans. But I think it's a good opportunity for him to continue to practice each week, continue to be comfortable and confident with how his knee is and how it feels, and to know how it is with if he is doing those rollouts and some of the scout team work and some of that stuff. It just allows him to get comfortable and confident, because that's a tough thing for a player whenever they do have an injury. It stays with them mentally, and they're a little cautious with trying to protect what they got injured with.
So if you're Andy Reid, do you just take the quarterback sneak out of the playbook, or do you make him run one in practice and not get hurt before he comes back?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody involved would prefer just not to just see that for a little bit.
Yeah, just hand it off to Anthony Sherman.
Sure. Sounds good.
All right, hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk specifically about the Vikings in this matchup on Sunday night.
When you're the home of the Chiefs, you give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. Any closer, and you need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. And starting next year, the preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick, every week you go really in depth with your film study. People can see that on Twitter. Jacobs Eye, hashtag Jacobs Eye in the Sky. Hashtag hash brown.
Nobody can see your hash browns right now.
They can right there. Yeah, right there. They can if they're on. We'll put it on. Put this little exchange on Twitter to let people know what they're missing.
Okay, I'll let them know about the hashtags and the hash browns.
The hash browns.
And for people that don't know, we're referencing Cobra Kai whenever he's like, yeah, you know, you use one of those hash brown things, and then he's like, and then send it to the internet. So that was, Johnny Lawrence was the character's name from Karate Kid. They do a really good show, Cobra Kai, that's on YouTube Originals, and it is one of Johnny Lawrence is one of my favorite characters now, just because he hasn't adjusted to the times. So he has a smartphone on the show now, and he's like, yeah, you know, my smartphone answering machine.
Is it true? I heard this is true. Is it true that every year since you were 13, you go as one of the skeletons from the Cobra Kai crew for Halloween? And can we get a preview of it this week, since it is Halloween?
That is a no on both accounts. It's a great try, but you're done. I did have the Karate Kid headband growing up. And it's funny. Like, I think that's what I love about that show. I know this is a Chiefs podcast, but what I love about that show is, like, when you're a kid, everything's, like, so you know, so clear that this is the hero, this is the villain, and there is no in between. But then,
Disney for that.
But then, when you watch Cobra Kai now, when they're adults and everything, and you know, if you're an adult too, you're like, I totally see where both of them are coming from and the experiences they had.
There's maybe more of a gray area in life.
There is, and I think that's what that show does a really good job exploring. So, enough about Cobra Kai.
Well, I don't know. We could just keep going down this rabbit hole if you want.
No, I'm good. I'm done with that. All right. Can we talk about how the
you know
Vikings,
what? If you keep crapping Vikings, on my ideas, I'm going to sweep the leg.
Are the Vikings like the Cobra Kai?
To Chiefs Kingdom, yeah, they certainly are the evil empire that needs a swift crane kick to the face this weekend. If you're the Chiefs, you don't want to drop a 4th straight game at home. I mean, at some point, you've got to start winning these home games and prove that that Arrowhead, I mean, you know, everybody keeps talking about, oh, Arrowhead being a tough place to play. You know, the crowd's one of the best crowds in the NFL. And yet it doesn't seem to matter, you know, at least when it comes down to results.
I think it would be funny if, like, they lost a handful of games at home, but then when they're in the playoffs, they went undefeated at home. It would be like the opposite of Marty.
That
would,
like, actually be really the absolute history. Yeah, the history of the franchise.
It would be, it'd be the opposite. I'd love that.
All right. So let's talk about this, you know, the offense. I mean, do you think, whether Patrick Mahomes plays or not, you know, what are some things you that they need to do in your mind to have a chance? I mean, because you mentioned, you know, when you look at Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, Linval Joseph, they've got some big, talented guys on that defensive front, and they can get pressure just rushing for, and even, you know, even sometimes when they bring a different blitzer, that, you know, they'll drop Griffin out into pass coverage on, you know, on a tight end or running back out of the backfield, things like that. I mean, they do a good job getting pressure with only four, and doing it in different ways.
Yes, they are able to get pressure with four, especially with Griffin and Hunter off the edges, and occasionally with Barr and Kendricks if they use them and on some blitzes and some of those looks. And I didn't see a lot of Harrison Smith blitzing like I thought I would, but I was a little surprised by that. But, yeah, no, I mean, the number one thing that they're going to have to do if they want to run the ball on that front seven is they're going to have to use double tight ends. Like, they're going to have to bring in Blake Bell and Travis Kelce or use Anthony Sherman in some capacity, and they're going to have to get creative, and they're going to have to set the edge with those guys if they want to attack that, and they're going to have to double team in the middle to move those defensive tackles, and they're – and I think that's where teams have been most successful against the Vikings is they have double tight either on the same side and they take the edge, or they run away from the double tight or on the weak side and they are able to get some yards off that. And then also they've just used the tight end on each side, and then they've just double teamed and figured out a way on the front side or on the cutbacks to be able to effectively run for yardage.
I mean, it's a game where you're not going to have, especially with the linebackers they have, they're kind of like the Chiefs linebackers in that they're very aggressive coming downhill.
Yeah.
And they'll come out and thump you. Lateral speed, sideline to sideline, a little bit questionable. If you can get him in pass coverage, you know, you can take advantage of it like the Packers did, you know, just because they don't have that quickness from sideline to sideline, especially between the numbers. But does this set up more, you know, we've talked about Damian Williams and his vision compared to LeSean McCoy's vision. Is this the kind of game where you're hoping that Shady's out of the doghouse because the opportunity, and we saw, like, Adrian Peterson, if you go back and watch last Thursday, because remember, the Vikings got a few extra days of rest in this one, just like the Chiefs had going into the Packers game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back and watch that game, Adrian Peterson had some nice runs making the cutback. I mean, the cutback lanes are going to be there, but Damian Williams hasn't shown this year that he can take advantage of those. So are you hoping Shady's out of the doghouse and can be in there? Because he's a guy who's it probably sets up better for him to take advantage of those opportunities.
I think McCoy could definitely take advantage of those opportunities and just hold on to that football, protect that, as if it is the most important thing in your world, because it is, on the football field.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, you hope he has better ball security this week when he gets the opportunities. And then Darrell Williams is a guy that I think could give him a little bit more physical nature with some of his running. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it works out. But the other thing that I think is going to be really key for him is isolating the linebackers like you touched on. The Vikings linebackers are not good in coverage. They don't cover well at all, and they're not. They're really, really good crashing downhill and blitzing and doing and stopping the run and stuffing the run. Barr is a big physical presence. Kendricks is he's gotten a little slower since he came out of college out of UCLA, but he's still insanely talented.
Yeah, he's impressive.
But if you isolate the running backs out of the backfield in the flats, and if you use them properly, or you manipulate some angle routes, or you try to get the linebackers to cover them one on one in some man coverage, I mean, there's tons of opportunities to be able to get explosive plays with your running backs.
I think another thing they can do is, you know, we've talked about delay routes. Like, if they're going to do double tight, you know, you have those guys in there, they block, and then if you release them on a delay, because of the aggressiveness of those linebackers coming forward, you know, I mean, you've seen teams be able to make plays, move the chains with some of those delay routes, because the linebackers will lose sight of those tight ends if they block first and then release after that, and you can make some hay that way.
I think the key to being able to do that, though, is establishing the run and being effective with that, so where the linebackers feel like they have to come up in those gaps and get physical to be able to play action pass off that and then do the delay.
I was also surprised. Xavier Rhodes, at least the last few weeks, has struggled. I mean, he's had a lot of Orlando Scandrick, Bashaud Breeland grabbing in his game. Is he a guy that you think that, you know, is right for picking on a little bit? You know, and even if you don't get some completions, get some penalties and get some cheap yards that way.
I think he would have a tough time against Tyreek, because the way Marvin Jones carved him up in their game, and I think he had three or four touchdowns.
Four touchdowns. I had him on my fantasy bench.
He had four. He almost had five in that game against the Vikings Lions game there. Yeah. So Marvin had a chance, and there was an out route that he had. Beautiful way that he did it, where he set him up right there, right before he's getting ready to make his cut on the out, and he did a little head fake to it, and then that caused Rhodes to hesitate for a second, and then Jones turned on his nitro boosters, and then he caught that right at the front pylon there. So I mean, Rhodes is a guy that, and I think the Vikings corners in general are kind of this way, to where when the receiver makes the first move, when they're getting ready to make the cut on their route, There's a big opportunity to force them to hesitate and to be able to potentially do some double moves against them, just like they could against the Packers last week.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be a problem for Rhodes, because even if Ty Hill split out to the right and Trey Waynes usually plays on the defense's left and Rhodes stays on the right, I'm not sure that Rhodes is a good Sammy Watkins is a good matchup for him right now either. I mean, I think Rhodes, there's a potential that he's going to have a tough time against the Chiefs receivers, including Mecole Hardman this week. So
yeah, I think there's plenty of chances that the Chiefs can get the pass protection that they need. There's plenty of chances to go after those guys.
Now onto the bad news. Dalvin Cook reminds me a lot of Aaron Jones when with his ability to catch the balls out of the backfield, with his ability to utilize the cutback, with his ability to pull away from some defenders. After what Aaron Jones did last week against the Chiefs, you feel like Dalvin Cook is a bad matchup. You feel like he can do some things, or do you feel like maybe the Chiefs can learn from the mistakes they made against him and have a better game against Dalvin Cook?
Well, I think it's a different style that the Vikings are going to run that makes Dalvin Cook as explosive as he is. And what it essentially is, for people who haven't read the game plan yet, is that this is honestly like facing the 2015 Broncos. Their defense is eerily similar to what the Broncos were then, and maybe not to the same level, but in that ballpark. And then the 2015 Broncos offense, with the stretch runs and with the bootlegs and some of the play action passes and some of the Gary Kubiak years and Rick Dennison, the O-line coach, because both those guys were in Denver during that time, and Kubiak and Dennison were all a part of Mike Shanahan's his scheme overall. So that's just part of their DNA in the NFL. So for Kubiak, who's assistant head coach for the Vikings, they run a ton of stretch runs. It's what a lot of their run game is based off of.
A lot of cut blocks.
Something like that. So, I mean, and Cook just works well in it. He has good vision in it, and he's got good explosiveness, and he's got really good cutback. He had a 70-some yard TD against the Packers from that stretch to where he cut it back, and it was impressive. And I mean, he's a good receiver out of the backfield, and he's a home run hitter anytime he touches the ball. So Aaron Jones wasn't to that level of speed. He had ability in both regards, just like Cook does, but Cook just has a gear that would be really fun in the Chiefs offense if he had been picked up here.
Kirk Cousins probably, he very well may end up being the player of the month for October after the performance he put together. Obviously Washington moved on from him, and you know, whether you think Kirk Cousins is an elite quarterback or you think Kirk Cousins is overrated, he's playing really good football right now. And a lot of that's off that play action. A lot of that's predicated on what Dalvin Cook can do. But I'm wondering, you know, the Chiefs pass defense, you know, first of all, the pass rush has ramped up here the last couple of weeks. They've been able to get to the quarterback, and their pass defense has actually been a little bit better than maybe people give them credit for. I mean, their safeties are playing well. You mentioned Tre'Davious Ward playing a little bit better. What's the key to getting Kirk Cousins off his game? Because when he gets going in play action, he's hard to beat. And how much of an impact do you think Adam Thielen's health can have? Because if they've got Kyle Rudolph, Thielen, and Steph Diggs going along with Dalvin Cook, that's a really tough offense to stop.
Yeah, when they're all healthy and they're all out there together, that's a very explosive offense that is a Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers away from being an elite offense. And that's just not who Kirk Cousins is. And that's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
Everything revolves around their run game and that working to really help him be effective on the intermediate and some of the deep routes to where he wants to roll all the way out on a bootleg and then throw it, and then throw it deep to Diggs like he did a handful of times in some of the games that I watched and to Thielen too. So, there's Cousins needs the run to work. If the run works, then he's truly effective. If he has to throw out a shotgun and the run's not really a big threat and the play action pass isn't as big of a threat, the windows get tighter for him and there's some opportunities to get some interceptions. And above all else, like I put in the game plan, their guard play is what gets them. And their center, Bradbury, who they drafted,
Bradbury from North Carolina State. He's a guy before they made the trade for Frank Clark. Would have been a nice addition for the Chiefs, eh?
Maybe. But he is a guy who helps either guard, and whichever guard he doesn't help has the problem. So, there's ways to manipulate those two guys to where you can get them isolated or you can manipulate them and have them step certain ways. And then Dalvin Cook, if you can keep him in pass protection, that's a win because, one, he's not making plays out in the open field, but, two, he's an awful pass protector. And he get run over real quick, or you can just do an okey-doke around him, and rushers have, and it hasn't gone well for him. So, and then their tackles, if you can get them to short set, there's some opportunities to get around them pretty quick. And so, there's opportunities to attack and to be aggressive with it and to kind of get Kirk Cousins' head spinning a little bit. But you're gonna have to set the tempo in the run game early to be able to probably be effective in all those realms.
Well, if you can hit him and make him throw off platform, Kirk Cousins, like most quarterbacks in the NFL, not very effective. But how much are injuries going to impact this deal? Because obviously Chris Jones, I guess he's practicing a limited capacity, but Frank Clark didn't practice at least on Wednesday. There's still some issues up front in terms of depth, or they're going to affect the depth just like they did last week, aren't there?
So you run that by me again?
I mean, the depth is a problem. I mean, the continued, not having those two guys, that puts a lot of pressure on the rest of the guys, especially if Alex Okafor also dealing with the ankle injury. I mean, they've got a lot of nicked up guys on the defensive line. It puts a lot of pressure on those guys, in terms of trying to stop the run, like you said, is going to be key.
Yeah, they need as many people to come back as healthy as they can on that D-line and that O-line. And whenever Mahomes is in a comfortable spot, and you'd love to have him back too. But yeah, no, those are gonna be the keys to kind of help this football team get to where it's capable of going.
All right, well, that's gonna do it for the B block. Before we go though, can the Chiefs win this week? I mean, is this another game where you kind of because we talked last week, you kind of chalk it up with all the people they had out. You kind of expected them to take one on the chin against Green Bay, and you kind of chalk it up as a loss. Is this another game that you're already chalking up as probably a loss?
I think,
especially if Mahomes doesn't play, I should say.
I think there's going to have to be a certain way they're going to have to play if they don't have Mahomes in pretty much any game this year, and they're going to have to hit on all those points. And I think the team this past week, and they played the Packers, I think they got an opportunity to see that when they all play together and they give everything that they got, they're always going to be in a game. So I think that can help build their confidence. It's just a matter of, like McCoy's fumble really turned the tide of that game.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Whether it's winning the turnover battle or making all your field goals, things like that, you're going to have to play just a little bit better if you want to have a chance to beat the Vikings this week, I think. All right, let's come back, and then we'll check tweets.
When you're the home of the Chiefs, you give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. any closer, then you need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. It's starting next year. The preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to Fourth and One. We're in the C block, Nick Jenkins, and you know what that means, right?
Yes, I do.
Are you going to let the people know, or
no? You only asked the question. You didn't tell me the part that I needed to say. Check the tweets. So we're checking them.
way to sell it, big guy.
Well, you know what? We all can't give 100% every day, Todd, okay? All right.
I feel like we need to have Frank Clark on the podcast.
Well,
or Eric Bieniemy.
That's funny because the first question, it's by multiple people, but I'm going to take this one of it. Gibby asked, what's the neck issue with Clark? Just a bad stinger or what? Hate this day to day.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether it's an actual stinger or not. I think he's had the ongoing issue with something on his between his right neck and right elbow that has flared up at times during the last couple of years. I think it's probably all related to that. I don't know, you know, whether it's going to be the kind of thing that requires surgery and he's just trying to gut through it, or whether, this is something that he's just going to need to rest to get better from. It's disappointing though, because I thought the game he played against Denver, was one of the better games he'd played. And so, and I think the Chiefs are a better football team when Frank Clark's on the field. So I hope this doesn't turn into an Eric Berry situation where they just list him as day to day and people wonder, and every week goes by and he doesn't play and he doesn't play and he doesn't play. I don't think it will get to that point, but I understand why fans are leery.
The thing I can tell you is that I know in December of last year, he had two UCL injuries, which I believe is in your elbow at that point. And I know he had, elbow brace on, initially on his right arm with some sleeves over it, and then I know he's in coach's film. You could tell he had padding on both elbows at one point, and then I believe he had a brace on the left arm in the Denver game. So I'm assuming there's something in regards towards all that that's kind of equated into what they're having to list as a neck on the injury report. Obviously, you want him to get some rest and to keep whatever's going on from being aggravated, but we'll see how it goes down here or down the road.
And you know, it's entirely possible it's one of those things that the only solution is rest. And so, the Chiefs may have to decide whether they're comfortable with him not taking reps in practice or scaling him back and kind of give him the Tamba Hali treatment, where, you know, you limit him in practice so that you can best utilize him in games.
So next question is going to be from Matt. He asks, do you think our star player will be ready to go this week, or should they rest Colquitt just to be safe?
I was absolutely going to make a Colquitt joke. He's not a spring chicken anymore. I think that he will do everything he can to play, but I think that Jack Fox is fine insurance.
All right, now Jonathan asks, why do you think Spags kept putting Hitchens on Aaron Jones? Or I think he meant out wide. I would have thought that was when you put Honey Badger out wide against Jones, or put Sorensen at safety.
Well, I think sometimes, depending on what package, what sub package you've got in, or whatever, what look they're giving you, other teams get to watch film too, and they can, they can isolate guys and get favorable matchups. I mean, I think that Green Bay probably looked for opportunities when they could get the matchups they wanted, and when they got those matchups, they took advantage of them. I think it's now incumbent on Spagnuolo, because it's not a secret. It shouldn't have been a secret that linebacker coverage was a problem. So now the question is, can he come up with a solution? Can he come up with a way to address that and to get more favorable matchups for the defense in those situations? And that's what they got to work on this week.
All right. And CJ Holmes asks, in your opinion, is this team set to make a deep playoff push if they get almost completely healthy, especially considering the strides this defense has made as of late?
I actually think that they can. I mean, I think that the Patriots have clearly separated themselves in the AFC, but I don't really think anybody else has. I think that the Chiefs are going to win the AFC West, and that means they're going to get a home game, maybe on wild card weekend, depending on, you know, what happens over the next few weeks and the timing of when they get Mahomes back. But you're going to get a home playoff game if you win the division, and you're going to have a chance, once you get in the dance. That's the important thing. You want to get an invitation to the party, and then you dance with the guys you got.
All right, and the final question is going to be from Jeff. He asks, do they give Dorian O'Daniel a look to be a coverage linebacker?
I mean, I feel like if they were going to, they'd have already done it. You know, I mean, the fact that O'Daniel is still playing on special teams, but can't see the field on defense, tells me that there's some sort of disconnect between what the coaches want him to do and what he has shown them in practice. And until he does whatever it is, until he checks a few more boxes for the coaches so they feel comfortable putting him out there, I don't think you're going to see Dorian O'Daniel in those situations. So,
all right, that's all for this edition of Check the Tweets.
And that's all for this edition of 4th and 1. Nick, do you have a prediction, though, before we leave for this game?
Oh, you're starting to bring those back now, are you?
I feel like we've fallen on our face a little bit because, you know, we the timing of when we've done these, we haven't been able to get Gary in because usually we try to do the predictions with the weather. By the way, the weather should be nicer. The game should be played in the 50s this weekend based on the last forecast I saw. The snow should be out of there. It should be good football weather for Sunday. So take heart, Kansas City, in that. I mean, you know, I expect the Chiefs to win. I'm going to say, I usually say 79-0. I'll say 37-0 if it's Matt Moore.
Okay. Non-Patrick Mahomes-wise, I think it's a loss. There you go.
All right. Well, there you go. On that ray of sunshine, we will bid adieu until Sunday after Nick assumes they're going to lose. Take care.
Time, George.